You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hi, this is Jay Horowitz with a special edition of Amazing Mets Alumni Podcast. And my special guest is Darren Meehan, the owner, creator, and chief muckety-muck of the 7 Line. Let me take it back 11 years. You were at Chase Stadium, 2011. You get kicked out of the stadium.
Yeah, I did.
You get kicked out of the stadium. Could you imagine 11 years that you are where you're in now, where you're sanctioned by MLB, new era, you have, we're sitting in a team store where your product is here. Could you imagine for fast forward 11 years we'd be sitting here talking about this?
No, I'm glad you brought it up because I wasn't sure if that's something that the Mets actually like me to talk about.
No, but listen. I mean, I just think it's looking weird. I think it's crazy for where you started.
Yeah.
You were because they had, you were handing out business cards, right?
Yeah.
And the ushers got up sitting three out of the stadium.
Well, initially the whole that was during the whole Don't Trade Rays, you know, movement, and I was making the signs and the T-shirts and so on and so forth, and then we had a big gathering of fans on the Shea Bridge on that Friday night game.
Right.
Kevin Burkhardt came out. We were hanging out, whatever. The Sunday night baseball ended up being Mets Braves.
Right.
And, you know, I was like, you know, I still got my sign. Why don't I grab a ticket behind the Mets dugout and bring it again, you know, see if I can get this sign on TV, you know? So Reyes is in the box. I'm standing there with the sign. The bottom says the7line.com, which I found out you can't really put website addresses on there.
Yeah.
So I'm getting all this free advertising on ESPN.
But Chris Carton defended you, right? I mean, Carton defended you.
The next day. I was on. You know, the whole idea wasn't let me get ejected, but it kind of worked out in my favor because, you know, they said don't show the sign anymore. I said, well, I kind of don't need to because it was already blowing up everywhere. So I folded it up. And then the fans around me were like, you know, kind of booing, like, hey, you should do, you know, keep showing the sign. I said, you know, I'm not going to ruffle any feathers here. So I handed out some business cards for the website.
Right.
And then they kicked me out for soliciting. And that was in 11. And then by 2014, I had the kiosk in the stadium. So to get kicked out and then have a official license with the league a couple of years later was pretty wild.
Derek, how many different shirts do you have now? Do you produce?
Oh, man, dozens. You know, everything has to go through an approval process. So it's different when, you know, Johan threw his no-hitter. By the next day, I had a shirt done.
Right.
And I was wearing it to the game on that day, on that
right.
Saturday day game. Because at the time, I didn't have to get anyone's approval. So, you know, certainly things changed when I got the license. So now things have to get checked by either the Mets and the league and the Players Association. So it's a slower process. But dozens at any given moment if you go to the site.
And I'm really, you don't solicit any advertising, right? You
don't. No, I don't pay to advertise. I never have. I feel like brand loyalty and word of mouth through the fan base goes a lot further than paying the fan to mention the brand or have a commercial on, you know, SNY, which certainly would be great for the business.
Yeah.
But I think that when fans find out about something organically and they tend to like it.
Yeah.
They have a stronger connection to the brand than it being something like kind of forced down their throat. So certainly in the beginning, the early stages of having the players wear the stuff was
that's
huge.
What I'm gonna ask. I remember, Zach Wheeler was the early.
Yep.
Lucas Duda.
Yep. Duda, Turner.
Turner and those guys. Once it got to the locker room,
right.
That was another big step.
Yeah, Harvey.
Right?
You know, Santana would wear that. That we did that shirt for the Gary Carter Foundation with
right.
the 8 with the teardrop. And I believe Johan wore it under his jersey for the entire season.
What I remember most, one game in particular stands out for me, the Cincinnati Clinching game in when we went in 15. And you guys were all over the place. And I remember even the guys talked about it. And I mean, that had to make you feel good.
It was crazy. Our friend Chris Duhl, he's a big Mets fan. He lives in Chicago. He drove to the game. And he, at the time, he was bringing his flag everywhere he went, the 7-Line Army flag.
Right.
And Daniel Murphy saw it, grabbed the flag, and went out on the field with it.
Right.
And
I
then
remember
the next day, it was a double-page photo in I think, USA Today or somewhere. But it was all over SNY. So, I mean, certainly having the players' support was gigantic. I mean, and you can't pay for that. So that's great.
And I remember one game, it was you guys were at the Dickey game in 2012.
Oh, yeah.
When you know, pushing our ring. He was in early. And
remember, absolutely.
Yeah, he wore it too.
So we did something with him as well. Not, sorry to cut you off. You know, he was raising money for when he was doing his Kilimanjaro climb.
Right, right.
And I think it was called Bombay Teen Challenge. I think it was what it was called. He was raising money. And so we started working with him. We had a shirt that looked like it was his face, but with a Darth Vader helmet, said Darth Dickey on it. So we were trying to get creative with certain things, and we'd certainly kick back to whoever the players wanted us to donate some money to. So yeah, I mean, this early support from the players was huge.
Tell me about the trips. I was trying to make, I know you read, you get like a thousand in your, and you make money on the shirts. I'm not trying to pry into your but how do you make money doing
this? We make nothing on the ticket. So the ticket's a wash. So the way it works is, since we do have the license of Major League Baseball, everyone needs to get their cut, you know. So the way it works is, like, we're going to Anaheim on Friday. I don't know when this comes out. Maybe it's already happened. But Anaheim on Friday with a little over 1,200 fans. So the way it works is, now the teams call me because they say, you know, it's the easiest ticket sale I've ever had. The ticket rep calls and we buy the tickets, tell them how many we need. Just for instance, yesterday our Philly outing went up. That's 1,500 tickets. We already sold over 1,000. So we buy the ticket and then bump it up a little bit to include the T-shirt. And there's a special game patch that'll say, like, Philly, and I think it's August 20th. And then you know, the league gets their cut for their, you know, royalties, and then the rest goes to us.
Didn't Colorado, did you guys go to Colorado?
Yeah, it was snowed out on Friday.
Aren't some teams kind of mad that, you know, there's like a group of 1,000 people in the stands cheering for the Mets? Didn't somebody say something sometime?
The Cubs. We'll probably never go back to Wrigley.
Right.
Wrigley was our first ever road game, so we weren't sure what to expect. I think that sold like 600 or so tickets, but the way the bleachers work, it's first come, first serve seating. So we knew that, and we didn't do a pregame party like we normally do. We said, let's just get there early, wait online, and get in. We secured our spot, so the Cubs fans weren't too happy about that. Like, let's say you have your certain seat you like to sit in.
Right, right.
We took over the entire left field side of the bleachers. Had a fun time. You know, knock on wood, we've done 130 outings or something like that by this point. We've been everywhere in the National League. Now we're clicking off the AL. Now that they're going to start playing the AL, every AL team, but they're going to do interleague every year now, so we should be able to close out AL pretty soon. But
how do you get the word? Like, how do you get the word out? You
internet,
do?
Yeah, the internet.
Really, that's crazy.
Yeah,
it's
I only have one other full time employee. I've been doing this. Yeah, around the.
It's really mom and pop, and
yeah, it's two of us. So yeah. I'll go to work, and they'll be like, on any given day, myself, Lizzie has been working with me. I've known her since I'm a teenager. I'm 41 now, so I'm getting older. But anyway, so back to Chicago. So we had a great time. The Mets lost, you know, shocker on that one. But the Mets lost. And then we tried to go back as a repeat as our 100th outing. It was going to work out. Our 100th outing was going to be a repeat of Wrigley. I put my deposit down. I guess whoever I put the deposit down with at the Cubs didn't get clearance from the higher-ups.
Right.
They didn't want us to come back and sit in the bleachers because I guess the presence we had was such a strong force. They tried to sprinkle us around the ballpark or spread us out over like 15 sections. They said that, you know, obviously that's not going to work for us. But the contract said bleachers. So I put up a big stink. I'm like, listen, we're already about to sell these tickets. It says bleachers, and now you want to spread us around. They even offered to put us on rooftops across the street. They did not want us in the ballpark.
Really?
So I canceled the outing. I said, listen, I'm not going to compromise what the group is because you don't want us to, you know, overpower your fan base. You know?
How do you handle all the phone calls then? I mean,
no phone calls. So
that shows how odd I am.
I don't have my phone number on the site. I mean, a lot of people say, like, hey, how can I call you? You know, we have a frequently asked questions area and a comment, submission form. But, you know, I'm around the clock. So I've been doing this full time for over a decade. It's crazy thinking now that Mets are in their 61st season, and we've been around for a sixth of it so far, which is pretty crazy.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And you really had no choice but to be a Met fan. Already, both your grandparents were Met fans.
Yeah, my grandfather worked at Shea, yeah.
What did he do, can I ask you?
He ran the press gate.
Really?
Yeah.
I probably knew him.
Yeah, probably. Bill Meehan, yeah. He worked
there.
Oh, no,
yeah.
And it's funny, like, you know, certainly times have changed, especially after 9/11, but we would show up with no ticket at all. We'd walk in, go to his office. Right when you walk in the press gate, the office to the left was his. So we'd say hello. He'd finish what he was doing for the day. We'd walk up the two ramps right behind home plate, and he'd talk to someone, and we'd sit there and watch the game. So I was extremely spoiled after I realized, hey, like, this actually costs money, you know, to go to a game. Because I was such a little kid, I didn't know, you know, just going to visit grandpa at work. So
one sign that caught my attention, after the 2009 season, I survived.
Yeah, yeah. That was the very first shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then there was a little leeway till the right. That's in 09.
That was 09.
Oh, 10, there was really no shirts then?
No, the first shirt, the I Survived shirt, came out right at the end of the 2009 season, our first year here at Citi Field. The Mets moved over and had a breakdown of disappointment. So it's like the collapse, the this, the that.
Yeah.
And then it said, let's go Mets 2010, which at the time, obviously, I didn't realize this. I was breaking trademark law, but I found out very quickly you can't write let's go Mets on a shirt. I changed it to LGM.
You didn't use the Mets logo in the early
never,
years.
Never. I knew not to do that, yeah. But I did write Let's Go Mets on the very first shirt, not thinking it was going to be a brand.
Right.
You know, it was just some funny shirts for my friends. So that quickly changed. I started writing LGM, which I think we may have been the first people to ever write LGM on apparel. I don't know if it was something that was floating around social media yet, but certainly now I think MLB trademarked it or someone did. But either way, that was the very first shirt. And then at the time, I was doing odd jobs. I was bartending. I was doing this, doing that, kind of anything to make myself a couple extra bucks so I can go to more baseball games. And I was like, wow, you know, it kind of struck something.
What do you
go?
How many games do you go to a year now, Ben?
Now?
Yeah.
Now with a wife and a kid and living in Suffolk County, not nearly as many as I used to, but at least 20. But when I was starting the brand and I could ride my bicycle here. I was going to at least, in total, from going to Yankee Stadium, or, you know, I'd go down to D.C. and Philly, I'd probably go to at least 80 games a year.
Wow.
Yeah.
How many groups do you have at Citi? I mean, how many
outings here?
Yeah, how many outings do you have here?
We typically do one or two a month at home.
Right.
And then on the road, we do between 4 and 6, depending on, you know, how the schedule plans out. But our road trips, the way I've done it so far, besides when we went to Baltimore on a weekday, they always have to be weekends. But in 15, we did Baltimore on a Wednesday and Colorado on a Saturday of the same week.
I know you guys were at the Barcola and Homer game too, right?
Y'all, Bartolo, yes.
Yes, yeah.
That was crazy.
Yeah.
It was, to be there in the ballpark for that, and I don't know if you heard the story, but we were pre-gaming at a bar up the road, and I met a guy and his couple of friends at the bar, and he said to me before the game, if Bartolo ever hits a home run, I'm going to get a Bartolo Colon tattoo.
Really?
And then it happened like an hour later, and he got the tattoo.
Yeah. There was a guy, he wasn't in your group. I remember we gave a guy a bat after the game from New York, but it wasn't in your group there.
No, the home run landed in the left field.
Right.
And a Mets fan actually caught it. A little kid caught it.
Yeah, I met the guy.
But we were in the right field, and it was great. The quote from Howie said, the seven-line army in right field might tear this ballpark down. So it was great.
And more, our TV started to pump you up a little bit more as we
TV?
Got...
No, never. But never. The radio always.
Definitely radio. More.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. I don't know what it is with TV, but no, not on the TV, but radio for sure. Howie's great, big friend of the group, and we love the radio support for sure.
Do you get to do anything special for Old Timers Day game? Or?
You know, it's tough. Like, I would love to, but I'm certainly going to be here, but the way that it works with our group, when the schedule comes out, we kind of get first dibs on the Big Apple Reserve in center field. So once that was announced, it was kind of too late for us to add another game. I'll be here for sure. As a group, though, probably not.
Who are your favorite Mets through the years? The guys you got to know? I mean,
I get this asked so often because it's sometimes we'll do like a Twitter Q&A and people ask questions.
I don't like to answer that question.
I think it's generational.
Yeah,
I think growing up, I'd say like Strawberry, Reyes. I like guys with a lot of flash, it's not to say that, you know, a player who's on the quieter side doesn't become a favorite, but the one thing I mean, I'm certainly, you know this better than anyone. As a fan, it's a little difficult when you get to the point where you do start getting to meet some of these guys.
Right.
And it kind of tarnishes a little bit when you think someone might be this really, you know, cool guy, and then you meet them somewhere and you're like, I don't really know about that guy too much. But, you know, if I had to pick, certainly I'd probably say Strawberry, you know, as a kid, and then Reyes when I was in my 20s.
Who's the one that's been nicest to your seven line? Is there
Oh, man, it's going to be so tough to pick a nicest. You know, what certainly helped, like we were talking about with the T-shirts in the clubhouse, was Turner in the beginning.
Yeah.
We struck up a friendship. You know, we hung out a little bit down in spring training. And then when they got back up here, I used to drop off boxes of stuff right to the side door here. Like, they would warm up, they'd do BP, yeah. whatever. I would text him, he'd meet me at the door, and I'd hand off a box, and he'd spread it around the clubhouse. So Turner was huge in the beginning.
I remember Zach specifically.
Zach Wheeler.
Yeah.
If you remember, before he got called up, he did a photo shoot for Newsday.
I do remember that.
And he was sitting on the hood of his pickup truck wearing our shirt. Yeah. Huge logo, T7L on the front. It was a three-quarter sleeve baseball shirt. He ended up signing it and mailing it to me afterwards, so I have it. So I have the cover of the paper and him.
I just really found it. Steph and I, because of the train, right?
That's, oh, yeah. Well, initially I was like, you know, trying to come up with a creative name for it, and people call clothing companies like a clothing line. I'm glad that the names I chose initially weren't available, because I was going to do something like Mets related, but obviously that wouldn't have flew in the beginning. But I'm big on domain names. So what I do when I tell this when I'm speaking with anyone who's starting a business is search the internet, make sure it's available. Because if you can't buy the domain, it's not worth it. So if you're going to come up with whatever, Jay Horowitz podcast, whatever, search that.com, buy it for $1 on GoDaddy and make that your brand name.
How many calls, because of all your success, how many calls you get from people in other cities? Hey, how did you do this? What can we do? Do you get a lot of calls?
Constant, yeah. Right. There's always fans of either other teams or other sports and say, you know, I haven't heard of, you know, a fan having this level of success, you know, building a brand and relationship with a team. Like, how do you do it? And he says, you know, I can't really explain that in a phone call, or I got to write a book or something about it, because it's really hard to explain. And I think that the reason why it kind of escalated to the point as it has, it was because of the fans helping it grow to the point. Because there was no roadmap. I didn't come up with a set of goals. There was no business plan. It was basically, I like going to games. Why don't we try to bring fans together and make stuff that other fans would want to purchase instead of going to, like, Modell's? You know, like, they have more of a connection to another fan making the shirt at their house than picking it up at a store.
But why
don't
you think it's happened, like, with the Giants or the Knicks?
I don't know. I can't tell you.
Or even the Yankees, right? I mean,
the Yankees have that one fan named Bald Vinny. He has his own T-shirt apparel brand. But as far as I think the escalation of the brand is because of the group outings. I think that getting the fans together, getting people together, even when the team is horrible, and say, listen, the Mets are 20 games out, but we're going to tailgate and have fun, get people together.
How did the first group outing come to?
That was the Dickey game.
It was the Dickey. Walk me through, how did that come
to? So we did a much smaller scale outing on the left field. I think it was the Party City deck at the time.
Right.
Where it was like 50 people out there, whatever it was. And then I became friendly with a ticket rep named Chris Leith, who's no longer with the Mets, but great guy. And he was a very early supporter of behind the doors here, you know, before we even had the license. This was pre-MLB license. And I said, you know, the Mets are playing. It was a Thursday day game in 2012. How many fans could possibly want to take off of work for a team not making the playoffs? And we didn't know it was going to be the Dickey game. It kind of worked out that way. Right. There was like a rain out the week before.
It was, yeah.
Something happened where the schedule changed and he was going to pitch and possibly go for 20 wins. So I ended up making flyers, hundreds and hundreds of flyers that said Dickey 20. And I kept them in a box in my backpack just in case he did get the 20th win. Handed them out after the game and everyone's holding them up. It was a big moment. It's on SNY's Mets Classic like once a week. So we purchased, I think, 100 tickets. They sold out right away. I purchased 100 more. They sold out right away. We ended up selling 560 tickets to that game for the Thursday day game for the Mets.
I remember.
Doing nothing.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of the stars aligned. Dickey threw his 20th win.
Yeah.
We had a great time. Went to McFadden's afterwards and partied it up. And then I'm like, all right, I guess we have to do this for opening day. So then we bought the whole section for opening day 2013, and then the rest is history.
When the Mets ticket reps probably loved you.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Now you have your own podcast. I mean, I was on, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And when did that start there?
So we're on our sixth season of Orange and Blue Thing. It's once a week just during the season.
Right.
So I don't like to get into the ins and outs of the X's and O's and
you
trade
have
some rumors.
Good guests,
and,
though. I mean,
yeah. We've, you know, Piazza's been on,
yeah, I mean,
you know,
like
a couple times. Daniel Murphy and his wife, they were on last year helping promote the prom series that she works on with a couple other wives. But yeah, we've had some great guests. Yourself has been on the show. But I think that we're more about like the show is more about like the community aspect of what being a Mets fan is all about.
Right.
Where are we going? What's our pregame party going to be like? And so on and so forth. But the I don't get into trade rumors and batting averages and stuff like that. I leave that to the pros, you know?
At some point, I don't want to put you on the spot. At some point in the 2000s, I was probably a jackass to you.
No.
You know what?
Why?
The one person who got me on the straight line, this is where I'm getting to the point, was Shannon. Uh-huh. And you were always so nice to her. I used to call for her fundraisers, but she always used to point me. I had a hard time acknowledging new sometimes, and she was always say, "This is a good thing. This is a good thing." I'm sure at some point, I probably said something stupid.
No, never. No. Always been a big supporter of yours.
Well, I just appreciate all the stuff that you did with her when she was sick. You helped raise money and do it. You always retweeted a lot of stuff, so that's appreciated.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
So what's your next, you don't know, what are the next shirts coming up?
I don't know. I think that the way that it, I love not having a plan. I think that's the best part of the whole thing. But I'm not getting any younger either, so it's the kind of thing where when I think about the group, and I'm not saying 41's old by any means, but now I'm older than pretty much every player in the league. Right. But as far as the group's concerned and trying to get youth, like MLB has a problem with, we could agree maybe, I hope, or I think, that getting younger fans involved in the sport's a little difficult now with the technology and social media and their lack of interest and attention span. So I think for me, trying to find ways to get younger fans into our group and enjoying what we're doing, because it's expensive. Yeah. Going to baseball games and traveling it's like almost impossible.
And you work hand in hand with MLB with this stuff too?
Not with that. I mean, no one dictates what we do. The best part about it so far is no one says to me, like, you have to do this, you have to do that.
Or you can't do that.
They say you can't, but they don't say you have to, you know? Right. So that's cool. But I think whenever it's over, I don't know, I'm not saying I'm trying to sell the brand anytime soon or anything like that, but whenever the 7-line's done, I'd love for fans to look back and say, wow, that was a cool, portion of the Mets timeline,
It's really remarkable where you became from 11 to getting whatever you got, asked to leave to where you are. And you have to and really self-started on your own terms, right?
I didn't go to any kind of business school or anything. Right. It's my business school is, trying to be street smart. And like you said, with Shannon or working with the team, whenever there's anything that the team needs or I try to help, promote this or promote that. I don't want to be even in the beginning when I didn't have a license, wasn't trying to be an enemy of the team. I was like, what can I do to be a part of this and try to help elevate the fan base and bring people together and get more people to come to the ballpark,
Was the MLB thing in New Era, was that a breakthrough for you?
Oh, it was very scary. Yeah. I mean, going to, the offices in, Park Avenue in New York City, sitting there at very scary meetings with a bunch of people at the table. And, it was almost presented to me almost like a take it or leave it. Like, here, you're going to figure out this license or you can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
So when the ink dried and we were about to announce that 2014 were an officially licensed brand, I thought that the fans were going to turn their backs on us, to be honest.
Well, they could be a come
Yeah, like, oh, you're a sellout or that, which I still hear to this day. I mean, but, it's... I don't care anymore. I'm in my 40s, and I have a wife and a kid and a mortgage to worry about. But the whole thing for a while was that there was this grand plan on the internet that I was working with the Wilpons and I was this. I don't have anything to do with the team besides loving the team since I'm a kid. And certainly there's a kickback to the league because I have a license. So, like, the little – look at the logos on the shirts. It says Mets on it. I mean, they have to get their cut. But, thankfully, now we're 8 years past the ink drying, and the fans are still showing up in droves. So
I should have asked you, you got to remember the sign man.
Oh, yeah.
Is that any inspiration to you at all?
Or I love seeing the old – the original sign man, Carl.
Right.
It's funny looking back at photos of what the ballparks looked like. No one's wearing team gear. No one's wearing, any Mets stuff until, it certainly started to be more of a thing where fans would buy jerseys and so on and so forth. But, I think that, my attraction to the lifestyle of just enjoying the day at the ballpark and the fan, you know, atmosphere was, do you remember Bo Field?
Yes.
Bo would sit behind home plate rolling her arms, and she had the styrofoam hat or whatever. Right. When my grandfather would get me into the games, she sat in that section. So as a very little kid, I would sit down next to her, not really even knowing what we were doing, but I was rolling my arms and having fun. Right. And I was a little kid, you know, having my Conn's hot dog and my RC Cola and, you know, whatever it was that my parents fed me that day. But, you know, that aspect of excitement was kind of something I was doing at a very early age. So when it came time to being my turn to get people together, I said, well, I've already been kind of doing this since I'm a little kid. Now we're just doing the group aspect, you know. Well,
it's been a getting to know you a little bit more, and best of luck. And hopefully we celebrate a world championship in the year.
Man, listen, if we ever, it's going to happen eventually, but if and when it does, I would love to be able to drive my truck down the Canyon Heroes. We put you on the roof, maybe.
Yes, that'd be fine.
We'll strap you in. Well, no,
I'd probably fall off.
No, I'll put your seatbelt on the roof. That'd be great.
All right, thanks for your time, Doug.
Absolutely. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Derek.